Here's what's coming up on today's episode of Your Tagline Here. So what is it that you really enjoy about teaching children the most?
Just the excitement. You just see the excitement on their face when they understand something. And I love the challenge of learning everyone's different personalities. And for me, one of the great joy is actually getting to know each and every kid, getting to know that their progress, where they're struggling and when they get kind of understand something. And I find it a great challenge to kind of find different ways of making learning on a level that they are able to understand. So that's what I take great joy in, kind of finding out what makes a kid tick. Like, what is it that excites them? And how do we create, like, the most mundane subject in science, how can we make it so exciting for them? How can we spark that imagination?
Hello and welcome to the 10th episode of Your Tagline Here. In this episode, I talk to Sid, who set up and runs a business called Femtinos, which provides fun and interactive science workshops for kids. And recently, as a result of the COVID pandemic, she's created another business called the UK Virtual School, which teaches science to kids online. I find out what she loves about science the most, how she set up Femtinos and made it her full-time career, and also how she adapted through COVID, which brought her face-to-face workshops to a halt. She also gives some great tips for other entrepreneurs about how to be successful in business. Before I get into the episode, I would just like to mention our sponsor, KitLab, which is a digital marketing company based in Birmingham in the UK. KitLab have over 15 years experience and specialise in branding, websites, digital marketing, social media and more. So if you want to grow your business online, just head over to kitlab.com, which is kiklab.com. Okay, let's get into the episode and meet Sid. If you do like the episode, then make sure you give us a thumbs up and subscribe so you don't miss out on any future content. Hello, Sid. Welcome to the podcast. It's good to have you here. How are you doing?
Hi, Simon. Thank you. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, well, I'm really pleased to have you here and I'm looking forward to hearing your story because I have worked with you in the past. I've helped film some of your events that you've run. And yeah, I'm interested to know more about how you got into science in the first place, how you started your business and how you set it up into what it is now. So let's just go back to how it all started for you and how you got into science in the first place. Do you remember how old you were when you first sort of fell in love with science? And what was it about science that you really liked?
I do actually remember. I was in year five. I remember being 10 years old. And I was moved schools. So I moved from one school to the other. And it was the first time we had homework. We never had homework in my previous school. And it was a novelty. And we had a project, a science project that we had to do. And the project was on space. And I remember getting so immersed in this project and I spent day and night just working on it. And I was only 10 at the time. There were no laptops. There was no internet. I had to get my dad to go to the library and get me some books. And I remember creating this project book where I illustrated the front cover with an astronaut and I put lots of facts and information in there. And I ended up winning first prize. And just doing that project just made me so curious about science and the world around us. And I think that was the moment where I thought, this is something really interesting. And I think that really sparked my interest in science at that point. And then I didn't really cover space again until I did one module again at uni. But there was always that curiosity and that kind of interest that science kind of brings out in us, especially the topic of space. I think space kind of excites everyone. So that was the first time that I realized that I really enjoyed science.
Yeah, I think science for children can almost be like magic, can't it? Because when you do chemical experiments and you make two things turn into something completely different and you get smoke and bubbles and all that sort of stuff, it can be really exciting. And space definitely is something that's very magical. So I can completely see how you would have been spellbound by it. Did you always know that you wanted to do something in science as a career?
No, I actually wanted to be a teacher. And I remember when I was, because I was the oldest of all my siblings, and I used to get them to sit down and I'd be, we played teacher. And I always wanted to be a teacher as young as age six. So in year two, I remember going up to my, was it year three? I think it was year three. I remember going up to my teacher then, who was Mrs. Wood. And I remember saying to her, when I grow up, I want to be a teacher like you. And she kind of looked at me and she goes, are you sure? And I was like, but you're a teacher. Why would you not want me to be one as well? And she goes, well, it's not how it seems. And I remember her saying that to me. And I was just a kid back then. She goes, there's so much more that you could do. And why do you want to be a teacher? And I found that really odd that she was dismissing the career that she'd taken. So as young as that, I wanted to be a teacher. Scientists just, it seemed really... like a dream career, not something that I could pursue because I didn't know any scientists. And I think it's really important that that kids are exposed to different role models, because you only know what you're exposed to. I was exposed to teachers, so I wanted to be a teacher. And if you look at, if you ask a child what they want to be, it's always about what they are familiar with. And I wasn't familiar with any scientists or researchers or astronauts or anyone working in space. I just saw them on TV or read them in books. So for me, it was always a teacher. But even through my teaching with my siblings, I used to get them to get a little bit of fairy liquid, get some water, and we used to pretend to do our little experiments. So I think I always had that science element in me. But that wasn't even when I went to uni, it was such a tough decision deciding what I wanted to do. So I didn't actually know that I wanted to go into science.
And what kind of science was it that you did at uni? Was it a particular type that you specialised in?
Yeah, so for A-level, I picked theoretical physics and, sorry, no, for A-level, I picked physics and maths, and I did art and textiles. So when I went to uni, it was either a case of doing creative subjects or doing analytical subjects. And in the end, I decided to do theoretical physics and applied maths. I hadn't done chemistry or biology at A-level, so I wasn't able to do those. So those were the two that I stuck with. But interestingly, I picked theoretical physics, which meant no lab work, because I hated lab work when I was at school. As a kid, I loved it. But then when I got to secondary school, not so much. I prefer just sitting at the back and just watching the teacher just show us a demonstration and telling us what we needed to know for the exam. And this is why I'm so passionate about how exams really dumb us down. They actually just make us sit something to get an answer rather than just forming a curiosity and love for the subject. So yeah, I did theoretical physics. And no way would I have thought that I'd end up doing experiments and getting involved in all sorts of stuff, because that wasn't my kind of thinking or mindset when I went to uni.
Which is interesting that that is what you're doing now. And I know from the workshops that I've been along to, it's full of experiments, which is great for the kids because it's fun for them to really enjoy it. So what was it that made you decide to set up your business, Femtinos, in the first place? And how long after university was that?
So Femtinos was actually set up whilst I was at uni. So I did 4 years at uni, and it was set up during my third year because they were running an enterprise program and supporting people to set up businesses. Back then, it wasn't about science, though. So you know it as a science and STEM workshop provider. Back then, it was about letter writing, because I'd noticed how letters weren't being sent. And there was, and I knew how excited I was when someone would send me a letter that was handwritten and sent to me directly. And I wanted to create a system where letter writing was safe, because that was the other thing. As we've grown as a society and we've grown globally, it's becoming more and more unsafe for kids to do things that would have been completely normal 50, 60 years ago. So I came up with a system where the kids would write letters to these alien characters, and the alien characters would write back to them. And through that they would learn about space. So there was an element of science, I guess. They would learn about space, they'd learn about the country, they'd learn about Earth. So that's how I was going to do that. And I soon realized very quickly, once I started to run that the area that I was located in, they weren't interested in letter writing. They wanted to have fun. They wanted to do crafts and art-based activities. And so I ended up running art workshops. And then more and more people started to realize that my background was in science. So they were like, oh, can you run some science stuff for us? and then slowly and slowly, like, it kind of morphed into this STEM workshop provider. At the same time, I started to do my teacher training. And through that, I learned how to do experiments. And I remember talking about this on another podcast where during my teacher training year, I'd never lit a match before, right? I was like 24 or 25. I'd never lit a match before in my life. Like every time I need to like light a candle, I would just use my gas, right? Like I didn't need to actually physically strike a match. And so I was doing this, and it sounds really silly. I'd never even boiled the kettle, to be fair. So, like, yeah, I'm really weird like that. So it came to me delivering a session in front of a group of year seven kids. And the class teacher was with me because I was still a trainee teacher. And she'd run through the experiment with me. She goes, you light a match, you light the Bunsen burner, you do this. And I was like, oh, do I tell her that I've never lit a match? Do I tell her? And I was too embarrassed to tell her. So I thought, I'll just go ahead and pretend that I know what I'm doing, right? And so all of these year seven kids are stood around me and I light this match for the first time. I strike it and it lights up, right? It lights up and I get so excited. I'm like, whoa! And everyone's just looking at me going, what? Like, even the teacher is looking at me. And I was so impressed with myself that I lit it on the first drink. So there was a lot of learning for me to do as an adult where I had not done things physically because I was very academic. When you're very academic, you don't actually do any of the practical stuff. And just like basic practical stuff that you'd expect adults to do, I had to learn. So it was a big, big learning curve for me. And this is why I'm so passionate now that it's really important that kids learn how to do a lot of these things when they're younger, so they're confident when they grow older. And there's been loads of articles as well. A couple of years ago, there was an article about how surgeons, they're passing all their uni exams, but when they're qualifying, they don't have the dexterity skills to actually carry out the surgery itself.
Wow.
They have all the knowledge, but they don't have the physical coordination and the skills to be able to do it. Mm. And that kind of shows how we've turned into a society where it's all about online devices and social media, where we're not actually physically doing things anymore. And I think it's so important that we actually do physically do things. And that's why I'm so passionate about what we do at Femtino's and why it turned into this whole kind of getting kids to do dissection experiments, getting them to do chemical-based experiments, getting them to light matches, all of this stuff that I learned as an adult. I am now passionate about teaching them as a child.
Which I think is great because those practical skills are really, really needed. And like you said, so many things are delivered or taught and learned online that practical element can be lost sometimes. And that's definitely one of the things that stands out when I have been to your workshops is it is very hands-on for the kids, which is great because it's fun for them. But also, like you said, it helps to teach those skills to them. So what is it that you really enjoy about teaching children the most?
Just the excitement. You just see the excitement on their face when they understand something. And I love the challenge of learning everyone's different personalities. Like, I love it. When I was a classroom teacher, we didn't have the time or the capacity to kind of really know the kids. I used to teach up to 100 kids a day, sometimes 150. If Wow. You've got a class of 30 coming in and out, you've got five lessons in a day, and some schools have like six or seven lessons in a day. You're getting hundreds of kids come through your door, and you don't even know half of their names. Even when you've been teaching them once a week for a whole year, you can't learn everyone's names. You learn the names of the kids that mess up a lot, and you learn the names of the kids that do really well or put up their hands. And everyone else kind of gets left behind, and I didn't like that. Like, I'm a people's person. I like forming those relationships. And for me, one of the great joy is actually getting to know each and every kid, getting to know that their progress, where they're struggling and when they get kind of understand something. And I find it a great challenge to kind of find different ways of making learning on a level that they are able to understand. And as the years went by, we started to experiment with mixed age abilities to the point that we had, and I think you saw this, where we'd had 5 and 14-year-olds in the same class and trying to create an environment where they were all learning and taking something away. They were all going to learn different parts of the workshop. They take different things away, but it was all about a collaborative learning environment. And to get to that level takes a lot of trial and error and trying to experiment and trying to really understand what makes kids work. So that's what I take great joy in, kind of finding out what makes a kid tick. Like, what is it that excites them? And how do we create, like, the most mundane subject in science, how can we make it so exciting for them? How can we spark that imagination? Like, we could teach them about blood by drawing diagrams on a board, or we could actually teach them by actually getting coloured like food colouring and putting it into water and showing them how much blood is physically in our body by filling a tank of water and going, this is how much blood is in an adult, actually creating the different blood cells physically through Play-Doh, getting them to see what the different structures are. Like, all of this can be done in a way which they can then remember for a lifetime. Like, I'm known for my poo workshops because it's memorable. They're going to remember the poo and the disgusting stuff we talked about. And they're going to, and I know parents come up to me and say to me that my child still talks about poo on the dinner table years later, because it's something that's so memorable, and they'll remember the healthy food that I talked about. They'll remember the different parts of the system that the food goes through, and they'll remember what a healthy poo looks like because we talked about it and they learned about it and they laughed about it. And when they use all their senses, when they use laughter, they create memories that are going to last a lifetime. And I think that's part of the excitement for me, to leave this kind of spark and joy of learning and to leave a legacy behind where they will then want to go on and do something amazing and teach someone else something. Even if they don't go into a teaching career, they might become a doctor, and then they might relay the information to their patients in a way that they can understand, so that everything is knowledge-based, everything. So even if you're not a teacher, you're still relaying knowledge in some shape or form. And even you are, like you were telling me about your cameras and all your devices, that's relaying knowledge. And if you've got the skills to be able to do that, it helps you form relationships, it helps people understand where you're coming from, whichever industry that you go in. So I think these skills last a lifetime, whatever field that the kids decide to go in.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that you said there was, when they have fun or when you do something memorable, like with the poo workshops, they do remember that. And that's something that will stick with them for the rest of their lives. And that could be the thing that makes them decide that they actually want a career in science or technology,
exactly.
Whether that's to be a teacher or whether that's to be anything else. And I think it's such a better way of learning rather than just sitting in the classroom. And I know from watching you deliver those workshops that you're so passionate and enthusiastic, and that really rubs off on the children as well. I want to go into a little bit now about the business of Femtinos and how you actually how you set it up and how you grew it as a business that you could actually make money from, so that you can actually do it as your full-time career. How was it that you grew the business over time?
So I worked on it full-time for a year when I left uni, and I quickly realized that it wasn't earning me enough money. And then I did go into teaching. So I was teaching full time for maybe a year or two, and then I went part time. So gradually, when I was building the business up, I was working alongside, and then I cut down my hours to then be able to work on the business a bit more. So when I left teaching, I'd already gone part time hours. But it wasn't still earning enough money for me to go full time on. And then I think it comes to a point where you go, right, I'm going to take a leap of faith, right? A leap of faith where you kind of go, right, I'm passionate about this. I'm going to make this work. And if you have got that, the difference in income, and you need to make it work because you've got bills to pay or whatever, you're going to make it work, right? Because you're not going to sit and back until you've got that money coming in. And I think part of that is that drive that comes in when you know you have to make something work. So I always like taking that risk when I, because you get complacent otherwise. If you've got enough money coming in, you're like, oh, it's fine. And you get a bit complacent. So that's how I kind of did it. I went part-time initially in my teaching job, and then I kind of left and I started working on it full-time. And then it was a case of, I was never, Femtino's was never about growing into a big business. Like, I had opportunities to turn it into a franchise. I had opportunities to grow into a big team. It was something I really loved, and it was my hobby turned into a passion, right, into a business. And for that reason, we never duplicated any workshops. The majority of our workshops are brand new, which it doesn't make any commercial sense, because it means that you're spending 10, 15, 20 hours producing a new workshop when you could be reusing the same stuff that you've done. I think what COVID has done for me is it's helped me to kind of take a step back, because when you're in that kind of wheel, that hamster wheel, and you keep going, because you know you don't have time to stop and reflect. And I'd got to a point in my business where we were running a ridiculous amount of workshops a week. And me and my colleague were completely knackered. And when COVID hit, it kind of gave me a time to take a step back and kind of reflect and kind of go, right, there was a lot of things that weren't working, but we couldn't step back because we needed the income to come in. And so it's that kind of, if you don't have the foundations laid from the start, and I didn't, it's very difficult to kind of build them in after, because you then have to be earning and you're in that hamster wheel and you're also then trying to implement new things, and it's so difficult to do that. So what COVID did was it allowed me to take a step back and kind of reflect on things and kind of go, yeah, that wasn't sustainable. And it wasn't sustainable to grow it to a level that maybe would have been better, because we would have been able to employ people, and then it would have just eased that level of stress on me. It was, Femtino's was very much focused around me, which is great if you just want a small business and you want to grow it around you. But I think there comes to a point where the growth is limited and the potential of reach is limited, especially if you want to offer it at a rate which is accessible to a lot of people, because the only way you can grow is to keep putting up your costs. And then the people that you're trying to reach, especially when Femtino's was such a social enterprise kind of venture, the people that you want to reach, you're not able to reach them. So growth is limited if you're just basing it around one person. So this is where it kind of, COVID made me take a step back and kind of really reflect that.
Yeah. So with COVID, well, before COVID, you were running physical workshops with lots of children together in a single space with you and your colleague. And when COVID happened, obviously those workshops couldn't happen anymore. So how did you adapt, and what did you do to your business to make sure that you could keep going through those difficult times?
So Femtino's was all about hands-on learning, right? It was all about being away from screens. Like, that was underlined in everything that we did. If we ever used a clip, it was literally like 2 minutes of something that we couldn't physically do in the workshop. So it'd be a clip of maybe a machinery that we don't have, or it'd be a clip of a particular place, or someone talking that we couldn't get into the session, right? So we limited screen time completely, because we wanted the kids to just explore learning like their parents would have done, like really hands-on without screens. So it kind of went against the whole philosophy if we tried to replicate that online. And I did initially, because we were in the middle of a course. We were in the middle of a 10-week course when COVID was kind of causing havoc around the world. And this was before lockdown. I made the decision on the 2nd of March, 2020. This was 3 weeks before lockdown, I think, that we weren't going to have any more physical workshops. And at that point, COVID hadn't even reached the city, right? There were no known cases, no kind of verified cases in Birmingham. And I had to make a decision. Do I want to put the safety of the kids and the families, because a lot of the kids are living in extended families, do I put that first? Or do I just continue and finish the course off? And that last workshop I had on the 2nd of March, we were doing on fossil fuels. And the kids were learning about coal and mining, and they were dressed up as coal miners, and they were digging up stones. I gave them these concrete slabs, and they had to dig up these little stones that were hidden inside of them. And one of the six-year-old kids was licking a stone. He was licking a stone. And you tell him off, and then 2 seconds later, he's licking it again, right? And then I kind of realized that I can't stop the virus from spreading between them. Like, no matter what we do, kids are kids. We can't stop it. So I made the decision there and then that we were going to stop all physical workshops, and the remainder of the course was going to be delivered online, and I was going to physically deliver boxes to their homes where all the equipment was going to be in there so they could still do the hands-on learning. So we did that, and we completed the 10-week course. And one thing I realized by doing the final 4 weeks online was that it's not the same. It's not the same. It doesn't match the philosophy of what we were trying to create with Femtinos. And actually creating the boxes took me 8 days to create the boxes for like 4 sessions, right? And it didn't seem like it was something that was going to work long term. So I had to take a step back, and then we tried to do things completely online, which didn't involve physical boxes. So I started doing YouTube videos. I didn't have any of my resources with me, so it made it really difficult because my office was closed by that point because lockdown had started. So it made it really difficult. And a couple of months into it, I tried lots of different things. I tried running courses online. I tried running YouTube videos. I tried little bits and pieces. And I realized that I was going about it all wrong, that it wasn't going to work under the Femtinos brand because that's not what the brand values were. So I took a step back and I decided to pivot, not the business, but to pivot what I could offer. And I set up an online school, right? So Femtinos, I put on pause because I realized it's not possible to continue that because the values of what we were trying to achieve are not, we can't accomplish those. So I set up UK Virtual School, and I had the idea at the end of Ramadan in May 2020, because I'd taken the month off, I was fasting. And when you take time out of your business is when the best ideas come. And so I had an inkling of an idea because parents were messaging me. They were like, oh, can you do academic stuff? And I was like, I don't do any of the academic stuff. I find it really boring. I don't want to do it. But then there was so much kind of interest in it. And I thought, okay, I need to do something online. There's interest for academic. Maybe I could make this work. But I went in with the vision that I do not want to do this long term. Like, I do not want to do the teaching long term because it's not something I enjoy. I don't enjoy being restricted by the curriculum. So June, we trialed out a couple of sessions with 15 families, and there was so much interest and the feedback was amazing. And in July, the company was formed and we did a launch, like official launch in September. And I completely pivoted. I went from a hands-on business to a completely online business. And what I realized is online is possible, but you have to create something that works with online. Because what I tried to do before, I tried to create Femtinos workshops online. That doesn't work. You have to work with the online platforms to create something that works with the online platforms. So I completely pivoted and I created an online school. And within the first 6 months, we had 18 staff and we were running completely online. I was hiring online. We were having all conversations and meetings online. It was such a completely different world. The business just grew. We got families from all around the world, because some of them were stranded in countries abroad and they couldn't get to the UK. We've got expat families. It's just been amazing. And I had lots of experience through Femtinos working with home educated kids. So the online school's focus has been home-educated kids. Now, during COVID, we were also a lifeline for homeschooling families. So parents where the schools weren't being so helpful, or there was a lot of backwards and going, coming in and going out. And so they decided to pull their kids out on a temporary basis, or their kids were shielding and they wanted to have live interactive sessions at home for their kids. So that's the kind of market that I've kind of solved. So I found a gap in the market where people were asking for something that wasn't being delivered to the standard or the way that they were envisaging. I created something that worked with online. So I didn't try to replicate school online. What I did was I realized from my own experience of using Zoom that you have Zoom fatigue around about week three, right? 3 weeks into teaching online, it hits you so badly. And I realized that actually we have to reduce that Zoom fatigue. We can't go on for 6-7 weeks like we do in a school term time. So all our sessions run for 3 weeks in a month, just 3 weeks. And then they have a break. Okay. And that break means teachers are able to take a break from Zoom. Kids are able to take a break from the screen. And it allows them to kind of rejuvenate and then come back fresh again. And that works so well. So online can work if you adapt, and if you adapt to it. I couldn't make Femtinos work online. So I just had to kind of draw the line and go, right, I have to wait for COVID to die down to kind of bring that back again. In the meantime, what am I going to do? What are my skills? What do I know about the industries? And I know the industry, the education industry quite well. I know the home ed market. So that's where I kind of focused on. So that's what I did over COVID to stay afloat.
Well, I think it's really clever what you've done. And I like what you said where Femtinos wouldn't work online because it goes against the brand values. So rather than trying to squeeze a square peg into a round hole, you came up with something completely new and completely different, which has different brand values. And I think that that's a really clever thing to do. And it's amazing listening to you talk about how you grew it as a business and how you've found different ways of working. Like you said, you get Zoom fatigue after 3 weeks. So rather than like trying to push it to go for longer and again, fitting into an old way of working, you were very flexible and very adaptable in the model that you put together. So I think it's amazing what you've done. So now that COVID feels like it's starting to come to an end, and we are technically out of lockdown, even though there are still, well, the virus is still around, what are your plans for the future? Will you continue to have the online school and Femtinos running together, or will you stop the online stuff and then go back to just doing the in-person workshops?
I think it's interesting at this point to kind of note that the audiences, the clients for the online school and the clients for Femtinos are completely different. Femtinos is very locality, it's limited to a particular geography, right? It's limited to my particular city and where people could travel to it. And the online school, it's got a very different type of family. These are families that want to follow the curriculum, while Femtinos was families that want something outside of the curriculum. They want to expand their kids' knowledge outside. So I see both of them working alongside each other. They're just different markets, essentially, within the same industry.
Something that I wanted to mention before that I didn't is through COVID, a lot of people were having to homeschool and the children weren't able to go to school. So it must have been like a really big lifeline for them to know that they can allow their children to still be educated by using your service. Yeah. And I guess that must have been really rewarding for you as well to know that you were making a massive difference to lots of families who are finding it very difficult to know that they have got a resource that they can go to keep on educating their children.
I think there's loads of families that have approached us and said that this has been such a big lifeline for them, that it's given their family structure and routine when like the whole world had lost its routine, right? Because the families have lost routine, they're not doing their jobs, they're not going out, the kids have lost their routine. But because they were live, and this is a difference where a lot of schools were also doing online, but a lot of them were doing pre-recorded content. And there was a lot of pre-recorded content. Or if they were doing it live, they had it without videos. There were very few schools that actually used videos. And what we've had is we've had a lot of families that have come to us and say, we like the fact that it's live, that the kids can talk to the teachers. It's a two-way thing, that they've been able to be have consistency throughout, while some schools were going in sometimes and then they were pulling out and doing online and they were going in, and that kind of it makes kids feel uneasy when they don't have. Kids love structure, they love consistency, they love routine, and when you pull them out of that, it completely messes up everything that they've come to know, and then their behavior kind of messes up, and it kind of leads into other areas as well. So hearing those messages, and a lot of the families call us family. They call us the UK Virtual School Family. We also call ourselves the UK Virtual School Family, and we talk about our community and our family, because it does feel like that. And it feels like we take the kids and the parents' feedback on board every month. We have a meeting with them. They can come in, they can relay their thoughts, and it becomes a family, because we've all been through this horrendous period of time. People have lost loved ones. They've had scares. They've had COVID. They've just lost jobs. And to be a lifeline for them has been so rewarding as well. And this is the other thing that we did this year. We didn't tie anyone into any long-term contracts. There's lots of online schools out there, and a majority of them tie families in for a whole year. And with COVID and with us being new, we didn't want to tie anyone in. So we would say, you're tied in for a month only. And we say a month because if you're going to trial out 1 or 2 days, you're not going to see any change. And 1 or 2 days isn't long enough to see progress. You need to allow at least a month to see progress, to see whether it's working for you or not, to actually build that relationship with the teachers. So we would say, you're tied in for a month. You can leave us at any point and not carry on. And that flexibility meant that if parents had lost income, they could go away for a month, they could come back again. And they felt a bit more secure in coming to us and utilizing us when they needed us. And knowing that actually they're not going to have to be forced to pay out huge amounts of money if, for example, they lose their job or they're really struggling financially. Because at the end of the day, we have to pay our staff as well. And for our staff, it's been a lifeline for them. And at one point we had 18 staff. And I remember having some of the conversations with them, and they've gone, this has just been a lifeline because our families have lost jobs, or we've lost jobs. And this is great that we can work online and be safe and be at home. So it's finding that balance where, of course, I'd love to do everything for free, right? But then it's also surviving and making sure we've got an ecosystem that's sustainable, yeah, totally. And people can live and people have jobs. So it's been twofold, where we've kind of supported staff members in having jobs, but we've also supported families in having that security of having something consistent for their kids as well.
I think it's such wonderful business ethics that you have, that you want to provide these resources and these materials for children. One, because you love doing it. Like you said, you would love to do it for free if you could, but you do need to be able to pay your own bills. And also, I like the fact that you use the word community and family like a lot of times, and that is something that is really important. And I think that comes across in the things that you do, and I think that helps the children to get so much more from it, that it's not this big organization that's just out there to try and earn money. You're doing it because you love it and you want to build a community and you want to help people. And I think it's such a wonderful thing that you do, and it's a wonderful way that you do it as well. If there's anyone who's watching who is thinking about starting their own business in anything at all, is there any advice that you can pass on from your own experience of creating Femtinos and the UK Virtual School as well?
Yeah, so I would, there's probably quite a few things that I could pass on. So one of them being, know what your values are. And I've mentioned it when I talked about the values of Femtinos, and I'm very clear, very, very clear now with the values of UK Virtual School. We have them turned into little monsters on our website. So you can physically see the values, the growth mindset, innovation, diversity and inclusion and curiosity. Those are our four core values. And like, if you know what those four values are, all of your decisions are going to be based on those values. So when you come to a decision, like, go back to them and go, right, what, like, which of these options in my decision are reflective of my values of my business? And your business values are going to be different from your personal values. So my personal values are honesty. Honesty is way up there. Like, if I'm going to work with someone, they need to be completely honest and transparent. But my business and what that represents, though, that has different values, because it's about the education, it's about the family feel to it. But how do we incorporate that fun of learning? It's innovation, it's diversity and inclusion, making sure that everyone feels included. So values is the number one thing that I would say to anyone looking to go into business. Know what your values are. Know where you're not going to, like, these are the boundaries that you're never, ever going to cross. Okay. If you know that, then you can build a business around that. So that would be my number one thing. And my second thing would be, test it out. Don't go into creating everything first and then realizing that you don't have a market for it. Like, I would say, before you spend any money, and I did this with UK Virtual School, before I spent any money, I actually advertised and I said, I've got this idea. I want to try this out. Any family is willing to give this a shot. And I trialed it out, but I got them to pay for it because I still had to pay staff. I still had to pay for other things. So I still got them to pay for it, but they knew it was a trial and they knew there were going to be hiccups and they knew that I was just testing the waters. So I would always say, and I think in business terms, they call it the MVP, the minimum viable product.
Okay.
Test it out without spending huge amounts of money to see if there's if people will bite, if there is a need and desire for it. And because if you're actually genuinely solving an issue with Femtinos, it was completely different. Okay, with Femtinos, what had happened was I wanted to create something based on what I wanted to do, and then I tried to find an audience to fit into that model, and that then takes years and years and years to establish. Because then you're focusing on a brand rather than something that's needed to solve an issue, right? With UK Virtual School, we were solving an issue that was clearly not being met by other organizations and companies. And then we created a brand around that. So there's a difference there. So figure out which it is that you're trying to do. Are you trying to solve an issue and create a brand? Or are you trying to create a brand and then show people that you're solving a problem that they might have? So trying to convince families that they need Femtinos because it's going to form a love of learning is very different than trying to get them to sign up to something that's academic, because they'll see the progress straight away. Well, Femtinos is a very long-term thing. It's a change in mindset. So it's a very different concept. So I think it's also very important to know what you're trying to do with your business. And my third point would be, know what your role is going to be in the business. So with UK Virtual School, I knew from the onset that I did not want to be a teacher in UK Virtual School. I wanted to be the person that had the vision and the values and create a system around that, solving an issue, but I didn't want to do any of the teaching. So my first kind of thing was to actually get things in place where I could get teachers in. And December was my last time that I taught. So within 3 months, 4 months of UK Virtual School being, well, actually we started in May, June technically, but within 6 months of us being actually starting from like trialing to doing it on a small scale to launching in September, by December was awful because we had quite a few teachers that were ill or that they had to leave. And then I had to take over a lot of the teaching and I was trying to run and trying to train up staff. And so it was hectic. And then after that, once I'd got all the staff in place, I could then take a step back and to work on the overall structure. So knowing where your role is in the business from the onset will help to quicken up everything that needs to fall into place to get you to that role quicker. With Femtinos, I didn't have that vision. And so 10 years later, I was still doing the same thing that I was doing 10 years ago because I had no direction to go in. So I think it's very important to have that as well.
Great advice. All three of those points I think are really valuable. And I think that they are often things that people forget about, like the values. I'm sure that there's a lot of startups that don't even think about it. Testing, I know from my experience, I did put together an online course and I didn't do a minimal viable product. I did what I thought was the right thing to do and then it ended up failing. So I learned from that lesson that, yeah, next time I do that, let's do a minimum viable product, and also understanding what your role is. And I think it's great that you recognize that you didn't want to do the teaching, you wanted to have a different role in there. So yeah, three very good bits of advice and things that you've learned from your own experience. And I think that can really help other people in a similar position to where you were several years ago. So now I've just got one more question for you, which, as you know, the podcast is called Your Tagline Here. So we ask everyone to provide a tagline to summarize their story. So what would your tagline be to summarize your story with science and with the workshops that you provide?
Oh, that's really difficult because I could give you so many different taglines. So I think mine probably would be, and this is a line that I've used in one of my recent podcasts as well, that learning has no age barrier, like continue learning. And I think if you continue learning, whatever you're doing, whether you're setting a business, whether you're actually in the education sector, whatever you're doing, learning has no age barrier. Like if you continue learning, you'll grow as a person, you'll succeed, you'll be successful in whatever you're trying to do. Because failure is part of that learning process and you'll always pick yourself up and because you'll know it's a learning curve. So that's, I think, would be my tagline. That's kind of my motto in life as well, where if something goes wrong, I'll moan about it, I'll rant about it, and then I'll go, okay, what did I learn from this? And there's always something to learn from it. There's always something to learn when things go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's clear from listening to you talk throughout the whole of this podcast that you are very good at learning about how to grow your business and how to grow yourself. And I think that is how one of the real big reasons of why you have got to where you are now. So yeah, I think it's a great tagline and something that everyone can really take away. So thank you so much for being on the podcast, Sid. It's been great to talk to you and, yeah, really interesting for me because I already know you anyway, but to find out more about how you got into it and how you've grown your business. So, yeah, thanks for taking the time and thanks for sharing all of that really useful and interesting information.
Thank you for having me, Simon. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks for watching or listening. I really hope that you enjoyed that episode with Sid. Next week, we'll be speaking with John Trevor, who is the mastermind behind the Box of Frogs improv comedy group. So I'm sure it's going to be a really fun episode with lots of laughs. To make sure you don't miss out on this episode and all future content, just hit the subscribe button and I'll see you next time.